Today's scripture reading is from Psalm 121, a song of ascents. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, good morning. It's so good to be with you to worship today. Thank you for leading us in worship this morning. And it's so good to once again be able to gather and consider God's word, to reflect on his grace and mercy in our lives. And I thank you for the warm welcome and the opportunity to be here and share in the ministry of the word this morning. I am wondering if anyone here can recognize the three mountains that you see on the screen. Does anybody know what those mountains are called? Anybody familiar with them? I'll give you a hint. They are not in the province of British Columbia. Does anybody recognize them? Okay, well, then we're about to learn something new today. If you drive to Calgary, you will go through, before you get to Calgary, a beautiful mountain community just outside of Banff National Park called Canmore. And along the highway, there is these three mountains. They're a famous set of three mountains. They're called the Three Sisters. And they're quite photographed. People have climbed them. It's considered one of the great majestic scenes of the mountains, especially if you're coming from Calgary and, you know, you drive from the prairies into the mountains and you hit the Rocky Mountains. This is one of the first great set of peaks that you see. Now, there's a story behind these mountains in my own life that I would like to share with you from when I was 6 years old. And in case you're wondering, that's quite a long time ago. But I still remember it very clearly. My family and I, we grew up in Regina. But all of our relatives lived out here in Abbotsford, Vancouver, Chilliwack. So every summer, my father was a teacher, and as soon as school was over, we'd pack the car up and we would drive out to BC and spend about a month visiting family and friends, grandparents. For me, it was a wonderful time, always a great, exciting experience. And so in the back seat of the car, I had two sisters, and I always had to sit in the middle. I didn't get a window seat. I always got in the middle. And I would say to my sisters, please let me sit by the window. I want to see out. I want a different seat. I don't want to have to sit in the middle. And they would say, no, you're the youngest. You have to sit in the middle. And I'd sit there and it would seem like the car, the traveling would take forever. And we stopped in Canmore to get gas, and my mom said we could buy a treat. I think I bought a bag of chips or something like that. And the service station where we stopped was right where we could look at these mountains and see them. And there was a sign there, the Three Sisters. And we got out of the car and stretched our legs and walked around. And my sisters looked at these mountains, the Three Sisters. And when we got back in the car, my sister said to me, see that? Those are the Three Sisters. It's too bad you're not a girl, because we've got two sisters and we need the third one. And you're ruining everything because Those are the three sisters, and you're a boy. And you're going to sit in the middle all the way. And it was just kind of like, I was so unhappy and sad. And I felt so bad because I just didn't feel like I fit in right at that moment. And I learned later in life that actually, when I was born as the son, my parents were overjoyed that they had a boy in the family. They loved my sisters, but they made quite a fuss over the fact that a boy was born in the family. So there was a little sibling resentment, a little sibling rivalry going on. And I guess the three sisters kind of brought that out pretty powerfully. It's funny, even now when we drive back and forth to Calgary, and we have a son and a daughter-in-law and two wonderful grandsons who live in Calgary. So we make trips back and forth to Calgary quite often. Every time we drive through Canmore and I look up at the three sisters, what do I remember? I'm still remembering that story from when I was 6 years old, and now you know as well about that. Mountains are interesting geographical things, aren't they? Mountains are very inspiring. They can be glorious and wonderful. As we drove today, we could see the sun was out and you could see the snow line on the mountains. And it was just a beautiful scene. They can be quite majestic. But at the same time, driving through the mountains can sometimes be incredibly scary. And all of a sudden, the same beauty becomes very scary and imposing. I know we've driven through the mountains a few times in the wintertime, and it's, you're a little nervous about all of that along the way. Mountains can represent a lot of things in life to us, and they can be representative of kind of the journey that we have in life. The psalm that we're going to look at today is about what mountains can sometimes mean in our journey of faith along the way. Psalm 121 is called a psalm of ascents. And there's a reason why it is called a psalm of ascents. Once a year, everyone who lived in Israel was expected to make a journey to Jerusalem for one of the festivals. And they had a number of different festivals throughout the calendar of the Jewish calendar. Everyone was expected to make at least one trip a year to get to Jerusalem for one of the festivals along the way. And many of the people who came from cities and towns and farms and villages all over that little nation of Israel. But a lot of the population of Israel lived around the Sea of Galilee. And they would come down the Jordan Valley, and the more they came down the valley, the more rugged it became. And by the time they got to Jericho, they were tired. And if you've ever been to Israel, you know that it's not very hospitable in many places. It's dry and rugged, and being a pilgrim on foot, traveling from Galilee down to Jericho was a hard walk. But Jericho was this beautiful oasis. Jericho is this beautiful place. It's right down by the Dead Sea. It's low in terms of altitude, but it's watered by the Jordan River, and it's an oasis. Jericho has greenery, and it grows fruit. It's like this magical garden kind of place. It's just this amazing place. Ruth and I had a chance to go to Israel on a pastor's tour a number of years ago, and we drove on the bus down from Galilee to Jericho, and it's just, when you hit Jericho, it's just like, oh, it's so green. Everything else is brown and harsh and dry. You can see in the picture there, Jericho is just this amazing place. And a lot of pilgrims would come down the Jordan River Valley and get to Jericho to rest and refresh and kind of gather new energy and enjoy the produce. Great fruit growing area, lots of fresh fruit and other food. And a beautiful place. And then they knew they had to get from Jericho to Jerusalem. It's 29 kilometers to walk from Jericho to Jerusalem. Anybody here done the Grouse Grind? A few. Okay, well, if you've done the Grouse Grind, you know that the Grouse Grind goes 2,800 feet over 2.9 kilometers. All right? Jericho to Jerusalem is 3,325 feet over a span of 1 kilometer at one spot. There's one part in that span that's harder to get up and down than the Grouse Grind. And the terrain was very rugged, very hot, very dry, a narrow path like that, very steep, and in a climate that very, very warm. It was also a dangerous walk. It was plagued by bandits and robbers who knew that people going on that trip from Jericho to Jerusalem would be vulnerable. The story of the Good Samaritan, who was attacked by robbers and bandits and left on the road to die, that is on that same stretch of road. Jesus told that story. People were familiar with how arduous and difficult that journey was, both physically demanding, very steep at a certain point, and that was just 1 kilometer of the 29. And it was really important if you left Jericho early in the morning that you got to Jerusalem or close to Jerusalem by nightfall. You did not want to spend the night on that road. There's very few places. There's no real shelters or communities or anything like that. And that's when the bandits would take the opportunity to rob people. So it's no wonder that pilgrims going to Jerusalem to worship God for a very noble reason, who were weary from their journey already, would get to this last leg of the trip in Jericho and realize the hardest part was yet to come in order to get to Jerusalem. It's no wonder, and this is what the psalm is talking about, this very position, this very situation of being in Jericho to Jerusalem, it's no wonder they would say, I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? In essence, they were saying, there is this great challenge going from below sea level up to Jerusalem, gaining at least an altitude of 3,500 feet. I'm already weary. I'm already tired. How am I going to make it? How are we going to make it? And some people were traveling with children and families. And everything, of course, was on foot, unless you were very wealthy and could afford a donkey or a horse, which was very few people. I lift my eyes to the mountains. How am I ever going to make it up to Jerusalem? Where does my help come from? Now, the Psalms of Ascent were psalms that were written for people on their journeys to Jerusalem, and they were written for people to sing, to make the journey more pleasant, to worship while they were going. And there's a number of psalms that are listed as a song of ascent. These are all songs written for people going up to Jerusalem. Psalm 121 is one of those psalms, and it was to remind people, when you get to Jericho and you've got this arduous challenge to get to Jerusalem, remember these words. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will neither slumber nor sleep. If you happen to be on the road at night, He who watches over you will not slumber or sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade and your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and your going, both now and forevermore. You see how these words now become very rich and meaningful and practical in a real life situation where people are at saying, we've got to get from Jericho to Jerusalem. It's hard going. It's dangerous. It's hot. We need to get there before nightfall. We're weary. All of these challenges are now addressed in this psalm, which people would sing to themselves and others as they traveled along. They would remind themselves about who God is in that moment of their need. I look to the mountains, where will my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. You know, we all have our mountains in life, don't we? We all have times in life that are very, very demanding, difficult, challenging. Sometimes we have problems in life that we don't think there is a solution for. Sometimes we just get so worn out and so weary and so tired, we don't think we can make it through another day. Sometimes we find in circumstances that are very intimidating and cause us to be afraid and fearful and lose our confidence and our hope. Sometimes we find situations that are very daunting in life that really overwhelm us and are way beyond our own circumstances. Sometimes we get discouraged. You know, the word courage in the Bible is a very interesting word. Courage literally means to have heart. Like the French word cœur comes from the word courage. When you encourage somebody, that literally means to take courage and put it into their life. It's like you're giving something to them that's tangible, that's real, just like food or something else. You give courage to somebody else, you encourage them. You add it in. But if someone is discouraged, it means courage has been removed, has been taken away from them. And God says that we all have the ability to either add courage to people's lives or to take it away. And as followers of Jesus, we are called to add courage to people. Ephesians 4:29 says, let no word come out of your mouth except that which is good and wholesome to build one another up, to encourage them. Jesus was the most courageous person who ever lived. He faced the cross. And it says in Hebrews chapter 12, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Can you imagine that? That's amazing. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross. He told his disciples when they were on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem that he was going there to suffer and die. And then it says in the Gospel of Luke chapter 9 that Jesus set his face like a stone and went to Jerusalem to face what he was facing. Such courage. And Jesus gives us courage for ourselves and to share with others. We have heartaches. We have failures. We have struggles. We have challenges. Some of them we impose upon ourselves by our own decisions and actions and choices. And sometimes we feel like the mountain that we're trying to conquer is ourselves. The great French philosopher and theologian said about this struggle, he says, we have met the enemy and he is us. And sometimes the biggest battles we face are internal, with our own thoughts and struggles. Other times the challenges come and are imposed upon us from the outside by other people or circumstances. It's been interesting to watch as we as a country and a world has faced and responded to the challenge of COVID as a mountain in life. We all have our mountains in life. In fact, is it not true that, you know, when everything's going just great and there's no problems and there's no situations that are bothering us, we're doing great. And somebody says, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fantastic. We all know that's temporary. And it could be the same day, the next day, around the corner, there will be another challenge for us to face. Take a moment and reflect. What are the mountains that you are facing in your life these days? The mountain or mountains? What are the things in your life you are looking at and saying, I look to the mountains, where does my help come from? Just take a moment to ponder that. Psalm 121 asks the hard question. I look to the mountains, where does my help come from? And then it gives us the great answer. Many of the Psalms are like that. They start with worship, they present a problem, they present a solution or some wisdom or some guidance, and end with worship. That's a very common theme in how Psalms are written. Listen to this. Verse 2. First one is the problem. I lift my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? Verse 2, the solution. My help comes from the Lord. Now, this is interesting. The maker of the mountains, the maker of heaven and earth, the creator, the all-powerful one. As I look into the scriptures, and there's so many stories in the Bible of people and their mountains. In fact, that's a lot of what the Bible is stories about people and their mountains. Joseph being thrown in prison, his brothers betraying him, trapped there. Moses fleeing from Pharaoh after killing people, even though he grew up in the palace, out in the desert. David being chased by King Saul, I'm going to kill you and get rid of you. Elijah and his servant, and he gets so discouraged, he says, God, will you just kill me? My life is a waste. On and on. You can read story after story after story in the Bible of people and their mountains and what God did. In fact, if Bible reading has gotten a little stale for you, just go after the stories of people and their mountains and see what happens. It's just like, it's like a better than a serial on TV. There's just one great story after another, all the way through the Bible. It's amazing. And we can learn how God helps people in those moments. I've looked at the many stories in the Bible, and I still love to read them and discover more about them. So far, I've discovered there's three things that God seems to do with the mountains in life. There's three ways he helps us. The first way is he just gives us the strength, the energy, the courage beyond ourselves to conquer them and climb them and face them. I think this is what Isaiah was writing about in chapter 40. He says, those who wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. They will rise up just as if they had wings like eagles. God will give to us something beyond ourselves to conquer the things that we feel we cannot conquer in life. And we all have times like that. And sometimes it's just the best thing to say, God, this is beyond me. I can't do it. I'm worn out. I haven't got the energy. Just empower me and give to me what it takes to take one more step, to go through one more day, to follow you one more time. And God just gives to us the courage, the energy, the strength, the joy to face those mountains. That's one way God helps us with mountains. Another way I think God helps us with mountains is that while we're on the journey of trying to conquer them, he gives us little signs along the way to help us keep going. Have you ever driven along the highway, going up to Whistler or somewhere, and you see a mountain face, and all of a sudden you look out, and there's one tree all by itself. No other shrubbery or plants or anything. There's just this one tree, all alone, green, growing. And you look at it and you say, how in the world does that one tree grow out of that rock? How can that be? Where does it get the nourishment? How did it get there in the first place? It just seems so odd. And sometimes when we're going along in life and it's bleak and hard and everything like that, God gives us a sign. He shows us something beautiful that doesn't seem to make sense, that says, see, I can make things happen where they shouldn't happen, where it doesn't make sense. Psalm 147 talks about that. He says, God causes the grass to grow on the mountainside. And we see something like this, and you go, that doesn't make sense. But it gives us hope. It gives us just enough wonder to say, oh yeah, God is here. God is the maker of heaven and earth. God will give to me what I need along the way. I need to be present to that. I need to be open to that. I need to see the wonder of God at work in my life and in the challenges of life, even when sometimes I just get very focused on the problem. Remember this, what we focus on is what controls us. That's why it says in the book of Hebrews, fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Focus on him, because for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame. What we focus on controls us. I love this picture. There's a tree growing where it shouldn't grow. There's something happening that doesn't make sense. That's sometimes how God helps us keep going with the mountains. Once in a while, God does something really amazing with mountains in our life. Jesus talked about it. Picks the mountain up and he throws it into the sea. Whoosh. And he intervenes. He intercedes. Back when I was pastoring in Kelowna in the 1980s, I know some of you think it might have been the 1880s, but it was the 1980s. Our church was growing. It was a very exciting and challenging time of life, and people were coming, and we were out of space, and we had a lot of children and families and youth, and we needed more space. And so we finally said, we need to build and add on to the building in order to meet the needs. And so we had plans drawn up and a proposal, and here's how much it's going to cost. And of course, we gathered everybody together and say, you know, will you support this? And, you know, should we do this? And we had a vote, and they voted in favor, and most people thought it was a great idea. And, you know, there was a budget. Have you ever noticed that when builders give you a price, it seldom is the final price? Anybody who's ever been in a building program knows that costs can get out of hand. And our building project went along really well, and one day an inspector said, you have to stop, you can't build anymore because you are missing some very important components in the roof of this building, and it's not safe. And it has to be fixed, and until it's fixed, you can't build anymore. Oh no, how much is that gonna cost? We got the engineers and the architects in to look at it and read the report from the inspector, and oh, an extra $225,000. We didn't have the money for that. Now we had this half-finished building and we didn't have the money to finish it. And there it was, and we needed it. And it was a big mess, and some people in the congregation weren't very pleased with how this was going. And there was some complaining and grumbling. And I mean, I was just one of the pastors on the staff, and you know, I didn't have a lot to do with, but I just felt so bad. The church was going so well and the growing and healthy, and all of a sudden we had this whole obstacle. We didn't want to see this all kind of fall apart. And we were feeling quite discouraged about it. And one of my jobs, this is back in the day when churches got lots of mail in the mail slot, you know, like envelopes with real letters and, you know, before email and all of that. We had phones where you had to dial, you know, and there's no cell phones. And I mean, back in the day, we can hardly imagine now. One of my jobs was to go and collect the mail every day and bring it into the office. So I did. And I brought the mail in, and there was a letter that came in. It was from a lawyer. And I thought, oh no, what is a lawyer sending us a letter here for? What's going on? It's something wrong, you know? And I sat down with my senior pastor, and he opened the letter and looked at it, and then he got a big smile on his face. And I says, what is it? And it was just my curiosity. Somebody in Kelowna who did not attend our church, who we did not know, in their estate left money for our church. They had heard about our ministry and thought it was worth supporting. And in their estate, they left us a check for $220,000. In one moment, the mountain had gone into the sea. I guess I should correct that. The mountain had gone into Okanagan Lake, scared Ogopogo away. There are times in life where God intervenes in a very dramatic, miraculous, surprising manner. That happens from time to time. I wish it happened every time, but God chooses to help us conquer our mountains in different ways and at different times, but occasionally those kinds of things happen. And you know, that was just one of those moments where it was like, God said, okay, keep going. I'm looking after you. Finish the program. And we did, and it actually came in, other than that big surprise expense, it came in on budget, and the church kept growing, and we had the space that we needed. It was a very interesting learning experience in life. Let me read this again. I lift my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? I lift my eyes to the mountains. How am I going to do this? Oh yeah, my help comes from the Lord, the maker, the creator, the all-powerful one, the maker of heaven and earth. What will he do as I try to traverse the mountains of life? I'm going to just change this from third person to first person. He will not let my foot slip. He who watches over me will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over all of us, Israel, will neither slumber nor sleep. God is attentive and present at all times. The Lord will watch over me. He will be my shade at my right hand. The sun, even though blistering hot, will not harm me by day, nor the moon and the attendant robbers that come by night. The Lord will keep you and me and us from harm. He will watch over my life. He will watch over my coming and my going, now and forevermore. I like to try, if I can, to take a message and put it into one sentence. Some people say to me occasionally, well, if you can put your whole sermon in one sentence, why don't you just give us the sentence at the beginning? Get it over with. Well, I think we need the context for it to make sense. Here's my sermon in a sentence this morning. The mountains of life can often become unique ways for us to deeply experience God. Is it not true that when everything's going well, it's easy for us to lose that sense of the presence of God. It's when there's struggles, when there's problems, when there's difficulties, challenges, internal, external, that's when you say, oh, I need help. I need God. One of the great things of spiritual maturity is to be close to God even when everything is going well. And not just kind of have this, well, I only need God when there's trouble. But to say, no, God, I want you to be present in all of life, in the joy, in the weeping, in the victories, in the failures, in the struggle, in the success. I want you to be present, and I want to be present to you in all the aspects of life. As we conclude this morning, I encourage you to bring your mountain to the Lord. Say, Lord, here's my mountain. I need your help. You are my help. I want to affirm my confidence in you as I face the mountain or mountains of life. And as God helps us, it's important to remember that when we are helped with our mountains in life, what we learn, what we experience, the hope that we get, the courage that He gives to us, we can use that to help others. I like what it says in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Praise be to God, the Father of the Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of all compassion, the God of all comfort. Yes. Who comforts us in all our troubles. We could change that word to mountains. And then here's what it says. So that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. So as God helps us conquer mountains, He then wants us to use the comfort we receive from Him to help others too. That's what community, just like what your banner says, that's what community is all about, helping one another along the way. I have a simple prayer that I would like to conclude with this message today. I find Psalm 121 is one of those psalms that we can go to over and over and over again in life because life continually has challenges. It's a simple prayer. It's an easy to say, not so easy to do. But maybe you want to pray this prayer with me this morning. God, I open my heart to your good work in my life. Empower me to be a great mountaineer. I'm going to pray that prayer again. You may want to just pray it along with me this morning. Take a moment. Let's just reflect how we're doing in our journey. God, I open my heart to your good work in my life. Empower me to be a great mountaineer. Amen.